All right, so we're back in the Xbox room again. Haven't been here in a while. Who are you? Tell us about yourself.
My name is Doug Wood. I'm a group program manager in Windows.
Uh-huh.
And my focus is making sure that applications work on Windows Vista.
Uh-huh.
And all other versions of Windows that we produce, but this is the focus right now, is we've been working really hard to get as much of the software that currently runs on Windows XP and Windows 2000 running just like it does, but running on Windows Vista.
Okay. And we have some other people here with you who actually, you know, test the stuff out and are developers, right? So introduce yourselves.
Martin van der Bosport. I'm a consultant with Premiere. I'm working here with 4DP on with customers to get their applications ready for Vista. Together with
Pat Altimore. I also work with Martin. We work with lots of ISVs.
So you guys actually see the real world problems.
That's right.
Cool. So and we'll dig into some of those today.
Right.
And I'm Vineet Sarda. So again, same, just like Martin and Pat, I'm a consultant on the team and working with the ISVs to help them out.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about the area of compatibility, and clearly it's something that's very important to us, right? We don't want people throwing away assets. We want to make it as easy as possible for applications to be able to run from iteration of platform, right?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about, and specifically Vista, the work you guys have done to try to make it easier for developers to get their apps up and running, and without maybe not even having to recompile their code.
Well, you know, our goal is it just works,
yeah.
Right? I think that would be the ideal, that we can innovate in Windows, but, you know, at the same time, make sure that the current investments people have work. And it's definitely something that we try and maximize the benefits there. But one thing that's really big in Windows Vista, you know, it's a phenomenal product. It's changed in many ways. Mm-hmm. But a big change is around security. Mm-hmm. And security historically has been an area that has caused compatibility issues. XP SP2 is an example of that.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, basically, most software, almost all software, works on Windows XP, SP2. So the ISV community out there has done a great job of dealing with some of those changes. For Windows Vista, we have a few significant compatibility issues with security. Mm-hmm. But across the board, you know, we're actually in really good shape. There's a lot of software just works right out of the box. And so for some people, it just keeps on working, and they can keep building even greater software.
Mm-hmm.
For others, there's some significant changes. And people often talk about UAC, which is user account control, as a big change. I have to say, a year or two ago, I was quite scared about it because it looked like it would be something that would break a lot of apps. And we've worked within the engineering teams to minimize the impact of that.
Mm-hmm.
And made it such that only a small fraction of applications today have that problem. But there's many things you can do to be better in supporting UAC and the security model of a standard user, so you have an end-to-end better experience.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, for XP, developers were writing their code as administrators, and their code was doing things that assumed that everybody's running as an admin, because in reality, most people run as an admin. It's just what you do. It's what happens out of the box when you install XP, you're an admin.
Right.
So you run it, and you just, that's how it goes.
And
so in XP, it's, in Vista, it's different.
It's different. And when we built XP, we really wanted to switch to the second and third and fourth users on the machine being a standard user. We just weren't able to because too many applications had problems. But we had the last 5 years to get it right and to figure it out. it took a long time.
Yeah.
But the key difference is that, first of all, Vista, you do run as a standard user by default.
Mm-hmm.
The first account is capable of being an admin, but by default, it runs software and the desktop shell is a standard user. And then everybody else, by default, is purely a standard user. So
mm-hmm.
whether your kids at home or whether it's employees in the workplace, you can run them as a standard user, and they can't run administrator code. So you can be more in control of knowing that weird stuff isn't happening on those user accounts.
Cool. So, I mean, let's move over to, like, so you guys have actually worked with some real-world problems with UAC. I mean, so I have an application. What are the things I need to look out for as a developer? Like, you know, talk to me about it. What are some of the things about UAC that are going to break my code that works on XP?
Well, again, so as Doug was mentioning, by default, if your program is assumed that you're a member of the local administrators group, that's no longer the case. So anything that your program is doing that would require administrative privileges, such as writing to program files, registering COM components, writing to System32, that all of a sudden is no longer allowed. So you get access denied.
Okay.
So that's by far is the largest thing that we see for applications doing basically the wrong thing under Vista. Mind you that with the logo program for XP-SP2, we already recommended don't write your files to data files to program files or System32, but write them to the directory that's specific for this purpose. So if you were under XP2 logo compliant, this was all fine and dandy, so no problem there. Mm-hmm. Can I explain a little bit more on whiteboard maybe how this works at the UHC?
Sure.
So the mechanics of this logging in as and how UHC goes about is that we have somebody, you have the welcome screen, and we have you type in your username and password, etc., username and password, you click OK. So what happens then is, the credentials are being fed through this, security, the LSS, mail. Credentials go in here. Mm-hmm. Then what we get out of this is we basically get two different tokens. We get a little AVI token, as we call it, which is the standard user. Standard user here. And then we have the big AVI token here, mm-hmm. which is an administrator.
Okay.
So then all of a sudden we have two different tokens sitting here on that interactive desktop. With this standard user token here, this little AVI, we can do all the usual things, such as browsing internet with IE, read email with Outlook, doing other things with writing documents in Word. All the standard things that you would do in your day-to-day activities, you can perfectly fine do here with this standard user account.
Sure.
However, if you need to install something, or start-stop a service, or register a COM component, then you would require, of course, those administrative privileges.
Yeah.
And then that's where the big AVI comes in. That's where the administrator account comes in. This is what we see is not so much a difficult concept to grasp for developers, but it's a big change from the previous anti-security model. Mm. It's a step away from everybody by default is logged in as an admin and can do anything that an admin can do. So here, by default, everything running a standard user, and you have to take deliberate action, elevate your program to get into that administrative account.
Okay.
And that's done through prompting. Prompt comes up.
That's right. That's the UAC prompt where they basically take a snapshot of the desktop and basically show you a non-interactive screen image, and then you click on OK.
Right. So you can still do everything that you would want to, even if you're an administrator, but you're going to see some UAC dialog prompts that come up, and there's various kinds that you'll see depending on if your application is signed or unsigned. So so as far as UAC goes, that would be the user experience.
Okay. But I mean, so for developers, for the UAC issue, it's mainly a problem of, not doing things that require admin privileges unless you need them. But then from a compatibility layer on Windows, for example, Internet Explorer runs in protected mode. So you can't break all the ActiveX controls that think they want to write to the registry. They create this sort of virtualization that's protected, right?
Now, let me tell you a little bit about some of the situations you get into with UAC. One of the first ones is installer detection. That, as Martin explained, that if your application, your installer, isn't detected, you'll never get the prompt. It'll just think it's another program running, and eventually you'll do things you're not allowed to do, such as installing files into program files and so on. So the first thing is you have to get your application install detected. Now, if it's MSI or other well-known installers, you're good to go there. You're not going to have that problem.
Okay.
The next thing often people run into is, did they design their application so at runtime they do the install app behavior during install and not during first run of the application? And sometimes system-level configurations, especially around opening up ports in the firewall, you need to realize there's a lot of administrator-type activities that you should either put in the installer, or you should separate into a separate process that your small Abby application can invoke and then only require administrator privileges for that portion. For instance, configuring a firewall or administrator-type settings.
Okay.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. We frequently encounter where programs don't do all the install things they should do during install time, actually during install time. So at first run, they all of a sudden just need to register one more COM component. And again, under XP, SP2, that would work fine if you were an administrator. However, under Vista, you're all of a sudden a standard user, so you get an access denied again there.
Okay.
There is, to chime in again on what Doug mentioned about compatibility, I think we were fully aware that there are a lot of applications out there that actually write to program files in System 32 and that did things in the registry. So what happened is there's some mitigation in place. If applications try to write to program files, mm-hmm. and we get that access denied back because they're standard user and are not allowed to write to program files of System 32, mm-hmm. we intercept that access denied and then redirect to a different directory. It's called virtual store SAM or somewhere under the app data folder in your users directory. Hmm. You want to be mindful, though, that it is a mitigation for us to make sure that the applications are working. Mm-hmm. It is also only working for certain scenarios. It immediately stops working, for example, for native 64-bit applications. If you're running an administrator, it of course, you never get an access denied when you write to program files in the first place. So there's no redirection there. And the last one is probably the most important, is that if you if you link in a manifest with your application, the standard manifest that you get from Visual Studio 2005, if you link that in with your application with a certain requested execution level XML node in that manifest, then there's no redirection either. Reason behind that is that if you put that requested execution level in your manifest, it basically means that, well, your application is... We consider your application to be designed for Windows Vista. It's a new flag in the manifest file. And so when we recognize that flag in there, we no longer redirect your application. It also means that you then also have to take care and be very careful where you write your files. So no longer to program files or System 32, but to the prescribed directories under the
user that are in the same security context. So just by changing that node doesn't mean it elevates your privileges. Correct?
No, it does not. Although there are flags in there that will elevate your privilege.
So the key thing here is that we're going the distance to really make sure existing applications work. But when you build a new application for Vista, mm-hmm. you need to fix up these things. You've got to correct it. And when you manifest your application, you'll now have to make all these other fixes in order to deal with program files and other issues around UAC. Our goal is to get people across this bridge towards Vista as opposed to having a whole set of legacy applications have problems. And the virtualization is really great. Like, there's really not a performance issue with it. It really fixes a large number of applications. So it takes some of the pressure off a lot of the ISVs to say, my existing stuff will work, let's plan for the future. And when we do that, we're going to make all these other changes at the same time.
And we, of course, will provide tools, right, at some point for developers who are writing to target Vista. We should probably, compile stuff in a certain way or they can code spit that they should use to do things correctly. I mean, we are going to help them with the tools, yes?
I'm sure you guys have been using the standard user analyzer, which is a diagnostics tool for troubleshooting, whether it's someone else's application, often in the enterprise space, you're asked to get software working that you don't even have the source code for. Mm-hmm. But in many cases, it's just, hey, I want to learn where my application's tripping up.
Excellent.
And the standard user analyzer provides logs about the type of behavior which isn't allowed for a native Windows Vista application.
And so the standard user analyzer basically is a tool which you run along with your application, mm-hmm. and then it will trap every API call that you're making in the system and keep track of that. And at the end, it will give out like a error summary saying, or it will give you a summary which shows that you're using these APIs which are accessing the registry and you're not supposed to do that. So it will just give you an entire list of things that you need to fix in your application. And the best part about it is that it will actually link up with your symbols in your application, so you'll know which function, which call you're actually making within the function to pinpoint, you know, where exactly you need to make the correction.
Excellent.
So that kind of straightens out a lot of things and makes it very easy for the developers to start go about fixing things in this stuff.
Cool. Now, so basically, we covered the security model, right? I mean, so you have now you're running as a standard user. If your app expects you to be running as an admin, that could be problems. Rethink about what you have to do. Do you really need to write the registry? Obviously, you will if you're writing on Windows to some degree. But the point is, so that's all. We understand that now. Separation of standard user and admin. You have to prepare yourself as a developer to make sure you're targeting the right things. You understand what your app's doing, and you should do it. You know, blah blah blah. Let's move on. So that's not the only thing that developers need to worry about in terms of being compatible on Vista.
Yeah.
What are some other areas that you guys have found?
Some another area is writing services. So a lot of developers write services on the Windows platform. And in the XP scenario, when a developer wrote a service, he ran the service as a local system and expected that he would have the entire system to himself. I mean, he could pretty much do anything at that point. In Vista, that has changed completely. There's a very limited set of privileges that are actually given to the service, and he has to explicitly ask for special privileges that he wants to do. For a very simple example, the MSI servers, for example. So if you're writing an MSI package and you have a custom action in your MSI to take a backup of some registry node or something, that will not be available. So there's a special privilege, SE backup privilege, that's not there for the MSI service. And without that privilege, you cannot take any kind of backups that you would have traditionally done on XP.
Okay.
So things like that have changed. So if you write a service and you explicitly need some kind of privileges, you'll have to explicitly ask for the privileges while you install the service.
Okay.
So those are some of the areas where the developers have to actually know what they want to do and request the special privileges before they install the service.
Interesting.
So that's another, you know, a different mindset that the developers will have to start dealing with coming to Vista, where, you know, everything is not just open by default. You have to request specific actions as per need basis.
True. Well, I mean, you know, it's important to note too that, I mean, that XP SP2 is not completely open.
Yeah.
It's just that developers are used to, they follow patterns and may have bad habits.
Yeah.
And that XP enabled them to do things that you can't do anymore on.
Yes. So going back to the fact that if they had, you know, logo certified themselves on XP SP2, they would have been pretty much very good on Vista.
Sure.
But
that's a very important point. Is that that's true? That's a true. I mean, is that that's reality?
It would resolve most of the problems that people are facing because of UAC, because of, you know, writing incorrect code. So I mean, if they were logo certified, there's a 90% chance that they would run without any issues on Vista itself.
This is the big thing is, you know, people say, oh, I don't want to get that logo, it's a lot of work, what's the payback for it? And really what we're doing is looking out for a lot of the ISVs, saying, here are the guidelines that are really smart to follow, and if you do this, you'll have fewer problems in the future, right? And we look to these guidelines as the ones that will survive over time, right? And do a good job, and you will be in a great shape. So getting the logo is a good thing, but writing your code in a clean way is even more important. And along the way, get the logo and tell the world that you've got a certified app. That's a good thing.
It is. But I mean, it's also partly our responsibility to ensure that the bridge is isn't too narrow or isn't too long. So
I think we can do a lot better there, and I think hopefully over the next few years we'll start to invest more to, you know, we need to provide more forward guidance. I think it's one big thing for the developers. And what's going to change in the next release after Vista? And help them out, and so steer them along. And the logo requirements are one way for us to do that, but there's so much more we can do, and we hope to be able to make that easier.
Cool. So, I mean, let's talk a little bit more. What are some of the other issues you guys are running into? I mean, you're getting nasty with the code, and you're dealing with ISVs, and you're seeing real problems. Like, a couple things that I would find interesting to talk about would be, what kind of feedback are you getting from these developers? Are they having a hard time? So is it hard to make your app compatible? It depends on the problem. I'm sure there's a level. There's some really hard problems to solve, which would be kind of interesting to talk about the ranges of problems. You have the easy ones, don't do things that you can't do as an admin.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not rocket science. Then you might have dimension up. I have to install a service, and whenever I installed a service before, I knew I was just going to run a system and I could do whatever I wanted. Now I have to know what to ask for. What's a little bit more complicated kind of problem you guys have run into? Are you seeing anything?
Yeah, so I wouldn't say complex. We see different ISVs every week. So it depends on your application and what you're doing in there. But, before we were thinking about what are the common problems that ISVs run into. We talked about the UAC and we talked about session zero. We also see a lot of questions and around installing installers,
mm-hmm.
So about MSI packages, and we were talking about the logo certification, and part of logo certification is you have to use an MSI package. So a lot of people are looking at MSI, and in the past you've been able to do certain things in MSI and kind of get away with it in XP. So what we'll see you will need to change the way your MSI package works. We see a lot of issues with custom installers, or custom actions, custom actions inside the MSI. So particularly around UAC, where something, you get an access denied when you're trying to, say you go through your MSI and you're installing your application, and then, I need to install a comp component or I need to install a service, you might poke that in as a custom action. So when you run the installer, it just kind of installs and then fails and you have no idea. So there are some tools that we have that we use inside the lab. There's an application called Orca, which will analyze your MSI package, and you can find it will detect some of those errors, mm-hmm. like if you're using a custom action.
So what I would say to that is that it's kind of counterintuitive in the sense that if my installer package is running, I should be able to make the assumption that the user said, yes, you can install this application, and therefore I'm now running in that acceptance context, which would be admin, right? How could you install something if you're not running as admin? So what extra thing would I have to do in my code to say when my installer is running, I need to do this action that requires admin privileges? Like, what do I do? Like, what are the semantics for my code? What am I supposed to do? I'm assuming that you're installing me, so I'm running as admin because the user said, okay, on the UAC prompt, you can install this app. But if it then fails for some security reason, that means I'm not running in the context I thought I would be running in because they said okay.
Right.
Cool. So let's talk about that. I mean, it's my misunderstanding, but I'm, let's.
Well, let me go back.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Thanks.
It's good to make this clear.
Okay.
Whiteboards are great.
Okay. I'm a developer, so I claim to be an MSI expert here. This is all from hearsay and what I understand of it.
Okay.
So in the timeline, what we have here in your installer sequence, mm-hmm. there pretty much globally there are three stages. This is so-called, I think they call it the prepare stage or the UI stage. This is the phase in MSI where you type in your preferences, etc.
Okay.
That all happens in this part here. In the second part is where the so-called the script is prepared. To later for the install engine to be executed. That's this here. I think this is called the prepare part.
Okay.
And then later on, we have the install part here, which actually does the installation, puts all the stuff where it should put the services in there, and the files and the program files, etc.
Okay.
Well, this thing here runs under standard user.
Okay.
And then this part here runs under the MSI exec. And I'm sure that my MSI buddies are going to call me as soon as I'm finished with doing this, that I got wrong in details. But the fact of the matter here is that if inside this part, you can have a so-called custom action.
Okay.
And the problem here is that this install part running in an MSI exec, which is running as this local system account, this custom action has, of course, no idea what the standard user is. Mm. So what it needs to do, it needs to go back and impersonate this standard user here in order to write, for example, put the icons, the shortcuts on the desktop, on the right desktop. You don't want those or icons on the desktop of the local system account, right? Makes no sense. So you want it on the desktop, the guy that actually initiated the
sure.
install signal.
Uh-huh.
So if this thing here, this custom action here, is impersonating the user, which is a standard user, mm-hmm. we're back to the story here with the little Abby that has no rights to do certain things. So what you get here is an access denied.
Absolutely.
On those things.
Great.
So what you basically need to do is, well, the workaround we've given them, and which might or might not work, is flip the no impersonate bit on this custom action, and then make sure that, and then all of a sudden, it parts of it at least run under the local system account, which has privileges to do whatever it needs to do.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that answers the question. That's excellent. But you mentioned it might not work, but
it completely depends what the custom action is doing.
Sure.
So the custom action still needs access to the desktop here, and if the custom action is doing complicated things, needs to get stuff out of the MSI database, then it might you might need to do some reshuffling in that custom action, split it out in two or.
Okay, and I'm sure the MSI team and Windows have a good reason why it's designed that way.
Yes.
I mean, again, by your model up there of splitting the tokens, always running as standard user, even if you think you're running as admin, which is interesting. It's,
right.
it's good.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. All right.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's talk about some of the other issues you guys are seeing. I think we've covered. It seems to me, based on the conversation that we've had, that UAC is pretty much winning here as far as the most common thing that
devs are finding. I think the reason why we like to talk about UAC is that it's something that everybody that builds an application has to think about. And there are other scenarios which require considerable work, but they're in very narrow circumstances. Like, for instance, if you build VPN software, the credential manager and how you tie your, whether it be biometric devices or card keys, various things like that, that needs to be rewritten in Vista because we deprecated Gina and we adopt the WinLogon where you can have a credential provider that plugs in. Now, it's a great change because you don't have to replace the whole login environment, which is a lot of code you don't want to write anyways. Mm. And you can coexist with others, so you can have multiple credential providers.
Okay.
But so it's a big change for a very small number of software vendors. And we've got great online documentation, and we've been working directly with many of those vendors. So that's why it's not as exciting as a topic for everybody to hear about.
Just the standard people writing Windows software that's just does something interesting that in order to install it, you have to be admin and you have to understand the new security model, which is pretty immensely different than Vista.
Yeah, many write services, and we talked a little bit about services, but there's also showing UI in services. And session zero is a little different, and we made half the change, you could say, with XP in the home environment where you can switch users. And
And
sometimes people saw some really strange behavior that you logged in as the first user, session zero, and then another user, session one, starts up, and something happens. Maybe they use a printer or something, and some UI will pop up and be waiting on the session zero account. And that's because the services assume session zero is where they lived. And XP exposed that as a new part of the design. We wouldn't really expect people to have written code to support that at that time. But we're still seeing, many years later, services that depend on session zero being the console to which the user is working with. And that's just not supported in Vista because that's, by default, how everybody works. And so session zero is, there's no UI, and the first user to log in is session one.
So it's just to kind of make things compatible with XP and moving on to Vista.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have done is, when the first user logs in, he gets session one, and when the system starts up, all the services run under session zero.
Okay.
And if anything happens in session zero with, which has a prompt waiting for you,
mm-hmm.
it'll actually display a small flashing message on the taskbar saying, session zero is waiting for some user action to be performed. You can click on that flashing icon and actually switch to session zero. So there you'll get this blank screen with that message prompt right on the session. You can do whatever action you want and then come back to your original session. So that's the compatibility layer that we've put in for people who still want these dialogs box to show up from their services, which they should not. But
true. I mean, that's basically, I mean, that's just a pattern.
Yeah.
You shouldn't throw up UI from service.
Yes.
I mean, that's just not, doesn't, you shouldn't do that.
But just to make sure that the apps still continue to work, I mean, obviously
sure.
those, they are working on it to get the next version out, correct, but
mm-hmm.
Their current versions can still continue to work with
Now, let me ask you this. I mean, the reason that somebody would throw up UI from a service might be actually to interact with the user as opposed to just give them a message.
Yes.
So if I throw up something with an OK button,
mm-hmm.
are you telling me that in session zero, as a user, I'm going to be able to click it?
Yes,
so
exactly.
That's important.
So you might be, you can actually switch over to session zero and you'll see the dialog box and click the OK button and then you'll come back to your original session and work as it is.
Now, let's talk about that. I mean, that's an interesting change in the security model because that will prevent, like, I guess, shatter attacks, or what's the reason that we did that?
Certainly shatter attacks are a big part of it. If you're running as a standard user, but you have the ability to interact with UI that is running with administrative privileges, then you've got ways to get in there and through Windows messaging events and other ways to you know, take advantage of the machine. And I just want to comment that the UI that you describe is one where it's really weird, right? It's a really weird experience. You click on this thing, you go to this whole new desktop world.
Right, nothing
there. You choose that OK button, then you blast out again. It's like some Star Trek type
yeah,
weird
cool.
wormhole thing.
Yeah.
And we did it just to like bridge the gap and make things compatible.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to be there for very long. And so the software vendors that see this with their applications fix it, right? Make the changes.
Cool.
Make it work right.
That's actually an interesting way to bridge by not breaking them completely, but making it like, well, the experience is less than stellar,
yeah.
so please, you know, I think your users probably want you to fix this.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Sorry, hold that thought. So another area where we actually do this and make the experience less than stellar is
mm-hmm.
We really encourage ISVs to sign their applications, to sign their binaries. Whenever you see after the elevation prompt or in the elevation prompt, UIC asks you, well, do you really want this to run this administrative program? This program requires administrative privileges.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on whether your application is signed with a certificate, a trusted certificate, you get a different experience. You get a different dialogue if your application is signed or if it's not signed. So you get a big orange warning, this is not a safe application,
mm-hmm.
or this is not trusted, we don't know who signed this application. That kind of dialogue you get if your application is not signed and you want to run it as an administrator, so as a big Abby, as an elevated user. Whereas if it's signed, you get a more friendly, smaller blue dialogue box that says, well, this is the application, it's coming from this ISV, which is yet another example of how we encourage, well, more the security model and how to make the ISVs responsible for...
Sure. Well, I mean, from the operating system's point of view, if the application is signed, the operating system can actually understand that you can know what it is, right? You can know what's running. Have a better understanding of what's going on. So there's reason. I mean, there's more. It's agreed 100%. I would ask this. Are there any shrink wrap software houses that don't sign their applications? Or is it mainly just stuff coming from the internet? Like I go to a website and there's this really cool app I want to download that someone wrote. That probably isn't going to be signed, right? I mean, isn't this signing process pretty been around for a long time?
It varies. I'm not sure what the numbers are, but some really pay a lot of attention to it. The vendors, especially in the enterprise space, where it's much more demanded. But we don't enforce it, so
sure.
not everybody has picked it up yet. But I think the majority, it's pretty broadly adopted now.
And looking at the current UI that Vista has, people will be tempted to sign them more because there's a very fancy UI if it's signed, and if it's not signed, you get this... yellow bar saying that, you know, this is maybe from an untrusted source or something
totally.
Like that. And so people will be more inclined to sign their applications.
Maybe we should have made it such that if you're not signed, you get this big ugly sign that says, you know, we don't trust this. We don't know who this is. You want to run it? And they say yes. And you pop up another one and say, are you sure you want to run it? You really don't. Maybe you should let us scan it first.
Yeah.
No. You so sure I mean, you don't want us to scan it?
I mean, if you have seen the changes from RC1 to RC2 and towards RTM, I mean, every time we try to show up more dialogues, you know, for prompting user input, it has always been, you know, people always complain about it. I mean, I got this first dialog box, now I'm getting the second one, now I'm getting the third one. So our goal has been to kind of limit the dialog box or the user having to kind of prompt, and, you know, we're already giving them an elevation prompt. We're then going to give them a trusted prompt. So we want to kind of eliminate as much as possible and kind of make it as smooth as possible for the user.
Cool.
So even though it would kind of make sense to, you know, ask them the various questions, but we still want to make sure that user experience is good while he's installing or whatever he's doing.
And I mean, it's important to point out too that it's there's a lot of stuff going on deep in the system that the user has that they don't understand how well they're being protected. So the UAC prompt and that game, yeah, that's a good UI metaphor and it's important, but the system is also really locked down. So that's important. And we actually have covered this in a Channel 9 interview. We got pretty deep in security with one of the architects working on the kernel security. I want to throw that out there. But
you know, we've often, you know, people talk about, well, is it security or compatibility? Which one do you want? And
that's a great question.
It's an easy temptation to say, well, it's got to be secure, so let's just break all the apps. And we usually say, well, the most secure PC is the one that's turned off and unplugged from the wall. Mm-hmm. And how useful is that?
Mm-hmm.
So your software needs to work, and it needs to be secure as possible. And I think we've found a pretty good happy medium with Windows Vista, because we got a lot more applications working under UAC than at one point we ever thought we could.
Mm-hmm.
The virtualization technology, various app fixes or shims that we can use to work around specific things that applications are doing. So I think we're in a good place. The thing, though, is that now it's the ISV's turns. Like they've got to bring out newer apps that just work really well in Vista. So once they get manifested or if they're built for X64, mm-hmm. you've got to follow these rules. And running a regular application elevated is not a good answer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the temptation, is to say, well, just market to run elevated as an administrator, and you're good to go. What more do I need to change?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the fact is a lot of people won't be able to run that application. Or they'll be annoyed every time they run it that they have to agree to run the application.
Mm-hmm.
And for most of these applications, you look at them and go, yeah, it's not doing anything special that is really administrating the machine.
Mm-hmm.
So we think that if they just kind of follow a lot of the technical guidance and the tools we have, we've done everything we can to make it easy,
mm-hmm.
As easy as possible. And many apps just work as is. I think actually the majority of applications will just work as is. So give credit where credit's due. Many of the ISVs have done the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
From
the beginning.
Yeah, like we shouldn't be here all talking about how every application is a problem in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of applications work very well,
mm-hmm.
just out of the box, without any special tricks, and we're really pleased about that. And then we helped a bunch of other ones. And then there's some categories around antivirus with network stack and with the login stuff where that just is a very fundamental shift,
mm-hmm.
in Vista. And that's why we've worked really closely with them.
And that's an important point, because those are two areas where we've done significant innovation. In particular, the network stack has been completely rewritten.
Yeah, so anybody that writes networking code in XP, there are like all these undocumented APIs, and you read through various channels, here's the data structures, and you're going, geez, I hope every service pack that Microsoft comes out doesn't break my stuff. And so we recognize that. We just had to build a fully documented and highly performant and secure network stack.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really think moving to Vista will create a lot of longevity and ongoing compatibility for those.
Excellent.
Which, you know, there's a little bit of desperation in the last 5 years with XP where viruses were coming in and all the software vendors did what they could.
Mm-hmm.
Now we think they can write more supportable applications on Vista.
Sure. And, you know, and I probably won't get into what I was just going to say because I don't want to edit any of this. So we'll, just in the sense of protecting the kernel, I'll leave it there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you let people patch the kernel, you can run into problems. And by locking the kernel, we eliminate those problems. But let's continue on to some more of the other things you guys are finding. I mean, we've covered a lot so far. What is there anything else you found we haven't covered?
Well, you were complaining about a half an hour ago about
complaining
that we weren't talking about security. Because yeah. A lot of things from a lot of changes in Vista have been done for security.
Sure.
And since we tightened down the OS so much, that's where the ISVs were into problems. Another big area that we see is installing and auto-updating code.
Mm.
So previously an application is installed, it's running the program files, everything is fine. But then also that same code is going out to the internet, seeing whether there's an update for the code, and then downloads that code and tries to auto-update.
Mm-hmm.
So auto-updating means changing files in program files. Fortunately, again, it's running on a standard user, it does not work. So auto-updating code is one of the big areas that we see, access denies, does not work, not good. The recommendation there is that, again, we have with MSI, with Windows Installer, we have a good recommendation. If you need auto-updating code, there's a mechanism with patches in MSI that you can, as long as you've signed your original MSI file with a certificate, and you keep that certificate and sign your patches with that same certificate, you no longer need administrative privileges to apply those patches to your system. So if Windows Logo program, which kind of mandates the usage of a Windows Installer and MSI file, was not reason enough to use MSI files, then this solution of auto-updating code, instead of having your own executable do weird things and or installing, even make it worse, install an anti-service in a local system that has to then update programs in the program files. All very ugly solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Just do it with patches. Sign the patch with the same certificate that you signed your original MSI with, and you're good to go. Plus, it makes you local compliant. What more do you want?
Sure. I mean, that's a good point. So
so we've also kind of, just to kind of bridge the gap between XP and Vista, we've made this compatibility modes in Vista. So let's say you wrote an application and you checked, you know, if Windows Vista do these particular tasks, if Windows 98 don't run my app, and now you take that app and run on Vista, now if you check for is Windows XP, answer is no, because it is not Windows XP anymore, and your application does not want to run. So to do that, what we've done is a compatibility mode, where you can right-click on any of your executables, and then you get in the properties of that executable, you can actually check to say that I'm actually going to trick the executable to say that it's actually running under Windows XP SP2. So there's a compatibility mode that you can set for your app. So this is, again, a short-term approach where, you know, you're not able to recompile your app, you just want to ship it as it is, but down the line, you are thinking about Vista also. So
but
just a short-term solution is you can kind of trick it, and it's a version lie to the app saying that, you know, you're actually running on...
But I would argue, I would hope that it doesn't mean that I'm able to... I mean, it doesn't mean that I'm now going to be able to do something insecure because I was able to do something insecure on XP.
I mean, the security thing would still be valid if the app tried to write to program files. That would still give you access denied and all that. But at least your app will run. If you've done those checks and if you've made some mistakes in your app for checking the actual version itself and not, you know, higher than XP, then you would be run into problems. Other compatibility modes that you can set is, you know, the resolution or the desktop composition. If the arrow feature in Vista, if that's creating some problem for your app, you can temporarily disable it by going to the compatibility modes. Another property in the compatibility modes is run as administrator. If for some reason you're unable to, you know, regenerate new code, which does just require standard user privileges, and you still want your old code to work, you can definitely go and check that box. But what that means is that when moment the user clicks on that executable, he will get a prompt to actually say that, do you want to elevate? And once it elevates, it'll be the running as admin.
Okay.
So that's more from a compatibility standpoint, which is kind of bridging the gap from people moving from XP to Vista.
Excellent. It's too bad there wasn't a switch that I could just, you know, go to my source code and compile it as WAC Vista. Remember the WAC CLR thing? And all of a sudden, boom, everything works. Wouldn't that be nice?
That
would be an amazing compilation tool.
You know, we think, you know, in general, the version checking one has been an ongoing problem, right? And a lot of times it's just people don't know what they should be looking for. And it seems right to say if it's running these versions of Windows, that's the one, those are the ones I support.
Mm-hmm.
Really, we want you to look and say, Windows is a platform that grows over time. And as long as the OS meets the minimum needs, consider in the future that it will still meet those needs. And if you take dependencies on certain components, check to see whether they're there. But don't look at a specific version of Windows, because that will more likely than not cause trouble. And you don't want to have to support your products over different versions of Windows coming out and finding out that it doesn't work and people are complaining and so on. But the tips provided are ones where if your applications are out there in the marketplace and have those problems, these are KB articles that you can write or something to say, hey, you know, right-click on the application, go to the Compatibilities Property tab and check these boxes, and then your app will continue to work. At least that's what we find most of the time, that most of the time it's not the intent of the app to only work on that version of Windows. It was just either by programmer error or some other reason, and most of the time they just work if you make that one change.
So now, you did mention, and we'll wrap this up pretty soon, but this is really interesting, so... you mentioned undocumented APIs, and in Vista we've done a lot of work to pretty much document everything. So how do you deal with a situation where, you know, it just seems to me like it would be a compatibility nightmare if, when you think about the possibility for all the applications that were just doing things that you shouldn't do, but they worked on XP. So are you running into situations like that?
Well, you know,
or is it just not happening?
People write these books, the tips and tricks, and all these 100 different things you can get away with on Windows that Microsoft never documented. Well, there's reasons why we didn't document them, because we haven't committed to support them over a period of years.
Mm.
So if your applications do really creative things like that, you should definitely be testing them right away. We've released so many different builds of Windows Vista during the development process that every developer should have access to it, and they should be running these apps. One thing we found that's different from Windows XP when it came out is most applications show really quickly whether they're compatible or not. It's not under lots of stress and memory leaks where eventually you run out of memory. We're not seeing those memory heap-type problems.
Mm.
Usually if you can install the app, you can run it, you can play with the functionality, you're going to be good to go. Uninstall it, make sure that works too. That covers maybe the 60, 70, 80% case.
Okay.
The rest gets into lower details, but from there, it's just about just testing your application.
So have you had any, I mean, without getting into specifics, have you had any really super intriguing, like really like kind of blew you away sort of compatibility experiences? Like an ISV comes in and you help them debug it and it turns out to be something incredibly interesting that's not necessarily, took a little while to figure out? I guess that's kind of a weird question. But I mean, what I mean by that is, you know, I'm just trying to kind of sensationalize a little bit about compatibility. Like, did you find any really interesting, you mentioned creative use of undocumented APIs that you're like, oh, I see.
Yeah, so I mean, whenever any ISVs actually use undocumented APIs, mm-hmm. they're obviously pretty much aware that it's undocumented, and they're always on the run. So it's not just moving from XP to Vista. It's from moving from XP to Service Pack 1 to Service Pack 2. They're always on the run to see if the API still exists.
Okay.
So they're pretty much aware if they're using undocumented APIs, they're aware that they have to constantly keep checking to make sure that works, because it might just go away anytime. So that's for the API specifically, the ISVs pretty much know that it can go away anytime,
mm-hmm.
and they should start using the documented, but I mean, for some reason, they think that, you know, that's the best way to do it, or whatever prompted them to do that, they still continue doing that. But from a experience perspective, pretty much every ISV that has come in, after he kind of sat with us, sat with some of the product group guys to understand what's going on behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I would say all of them, I mean, it's not like, you know, 90%, it's all of them were pretty satisfied with the way it works, and having a better understanding of how it works,
mm-hmm.
they were pretty happy with that, and they were acceptable to the fact that, you know, they know how to design it going down the line. So that was a very positive response we got from ISVs, that everybody, having understood what's going on behind the covers, they were pretty satisfied with what, at least they knew what they needed to do.
Outstanding.
I'll give you an example of one that I thought was amusing, and I'll leave the software unnamed, but it was a media player application. And if you're familiar with desktop window manager and Flip3D. It's a really cool feature where you can see a 3D stack of your applications.
Yep.
Well, when you're playing media, what happens is Flip3D actually puts a window in front of everything on your screen. You don't really know it, but it's there. And then you flip through what's there, and then when you choose the app, that window goes away, and then they bring the right one in front.
Mm-hmm.
So this media player application looked and said, well, if there's anything in front of me, then I'm not going to draw, because why would I want to draw when there's a window totally covering me up? And so when you flip 3D and you get these really live images and everything, well, their image is frozen, and you wonder, well, why is it frozen? And because they're making that assumption. Now, we could never have expected them to have planned for that, and they're optimizing for it was really smart.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really trivial fix for them. We called them up and said, hey, do you know you're doing this? And they said, oh, yeah, and you know, they fixed it.
Cool.
But it's one of those interesting things where we never would have thought that would have been an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And you find it just like that. So once you just start playing with this stuff, you'll see it and make the changes.
Excellent. So call to action for devs. Start testing your stuff on Vista. Let's go.
Absolutely. And tying back to the question previously, I think when we work with ISVs, about 90% of their issues, if not 95%, is pretty well known. It's UAC, session zero isolation to a lesser extent, or maybe some mandatory integrity control issues. But there's always one or two issues which are completely new, which takes about a day or 2 days to figure out. The issue that Vinit just mentioned with the backup privilege missing in the MSI servers is weird. It surprises. There's our issues with RPC buffers just working a bit differently than was working on XP-SP2. So absolutely, ISVs, start doing this on Vista if you're not already doing it, and start testing it, and get into the local program while you're at it.
Yeah, definitely. And we're always here to help them, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So let's talk about, what's the online presence? Where do I go? I'm a developer. I want to get all this information that we just talked about. Where do I go get the tool that you mentioned that can tell me I'm not doing something right?
We've got tons of information online, and the best place to start is devreadiness.org.
Okay.
That's the place to start. I mean, there are links off that website just about to anything and everything that you want.
Okay.
There are facts, there are hands-on labs if you want to get started with the new features.
Nice.
So there's a document that actually runs through what you need to do in the lab, and it runs through a scenario that's pretty useful.
Okay.
There's the blogs that we have, so blogs.msdn.com/appcompatteam.
Okay.
That's the blogs that our team specifically, after every lab event, we kind of put down the common problems that we've seen in the labs. That way, anybody else who's seeing the problems can, refer back to our blog and see what the fix was.
Excellent.
So we have tons of resources on the website. So,
One other thing that I'd like to say is if you don't know where to start testing, maybe try to find some guidelines on what your app might have problems with.
Mm-hmm.
We have a document on devreadiness.org that's called the ISV cookbook. And right at the beginning of that, there's a 30-minute compatibility test, and it'll walk you through the steps to test your app.
Excellent.
And so if you can walk through that and you can actually pass that, there's a logo program called Works with Windows Vista. Mm-hmm. And if you make it through that 30-minute compatibility test, you can actually self-test and submit for that logo. And then if you want to go to the next level of certification, they're certified for Windows Vista. And there's another group of test cases you can walk through, and that's another great set of test scenarios that you can walk through. And it's the exact test scenario, test cases that a testing vendor would go through. Did we miss any other?
Yeah, it's www.innovateonwindowsvista.com, which is a big, long URL,
mm-hmm.
But it's a great place to go. It's got all the logo information on it, especially, and links to these other sites.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I wanted to mention is logo is great, but you could say, well, what happens when I've got it?
Mm-hmm.
And we want to make it very visible to people, so it's going to surface in many different places. If you've got the Windows logo, whether it be the certified logo or the Works with Windows Vista logo, it's going to surface on Marketplace. So when you search for applications, you'll know, a customer will know that your application is a good thing to buy for Windows Vista. It's going to surface with the Windows Vista Upgrade Advisor. So all these people that download that tool and run it on XP and say, hey, will my machine run on Vista? Well, will my software run as well? Mm-hmm. And if it has the logo, that's a good sign. That's a sign that says, you know, it's made for Windows Vista, or it will at least run and be compatible with Windows Vista.
Cool.
And the third thing is, if you sell in the enterprise space, you can run the App Compat Toolkit to inventory all your applications and directly tell the IT guys that, hey, my app works, don't be worried about it. So we're going to surface this because all the logo submissions go into our online database and we can share it out with those that want to know.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
And we also have a very strong support in the forums. So not only the App Compat team, but the product team is also actually constantly monitoring the forums to see, you know, who's having what kind of problems, and we're actually making sure that every question is getting answered on the forums.
This is the MSDN forum?
This is MSDN forums, yeah. So, yeah, we're making sure that we have a strong presence on the forums to make sure all the issues that people are coming with are actually getting resolved.
Excellent. Well, this has been fun. And what will you guys had also mentioned that we will do some screencasts for Channel 9.
Sure. Yes,
and
we'll definitely get those, and you know that will be a good insight of what we just talked about.
Absolutely, from a development standpoint.
Sure.
This has been a really good conversation. Nice to meet you all.
Thank you very much.
And great job.
Get your applications ready for Vista.
All right.
Really.